Welcome, everyone. I'm Claire Zammit, the co-founder of the Feminine Power Global Community, the Women on the Edge of Evolution teleseries, and Evolving Wisdom, the organization hosting this event. I have the privilege of being here to introduce one of the greatest evolutionary women of our time, my dear friend, colleague, and mentor, Dr. Jean Houston, presenting the three keys to discovering your purpose. Dr. Houston is a guiding light in our world, one of the principal founders of the Human Potential Movement. She is a tireless teacher, a dynamic speaker, author, innovator, and one of the leading visionaries of our time. Jean is the founder and principal teacher of the Mystery School, dedicated to teaching and exploring the many dimensions of our human potential. Jean has worked intensively in 40 cultures and 100 countries and dedicated her life to understanding life codes and helping others activate their highest calling, from advising heads of state, writing best-selling books, collaborating with spiritual luminaries, and speaking around the globe. Jean has awakened countless people to their life's true meaning and purpose. On this call, Jean will be guiding you through the three purpose activation keys from her unique work that she has discovered and developed over the course of a 50-year career. Jean's keys have enabled people from all walks of life to discover work they love, to start and join communities that share a common purpose, and become catalysts for their higher potential. Jean has been a very pivotal influence for me in my own life personally, in helping me to connect with my own deeper, higher, true purpose and manifest the means to realize it. So I'm absolutely honored, thrilled, and delighted to welcome her to share the three keys to discovering your life purpose. Welcome, Jean.
Thank you so much, Claire. Thank you for that very generous introduction. And everybody, welcome to the three keys to discovering your life's purpose. Now, I'm very excited that so many of you have decided to join me. And for those of you who don't know me, I've spent decades exploring what humans can be and what they can do about it. And in this, I've helped, they say, well, hundreds of thousands of people worldwide discover and live their larger life, their higher purpose. I've spent decades studying both the human capacity as well as the social capacity, the cultural capacities, and putting them together and understanding or trying to understand the momentous times of which we are a part. And I'm here because the reset button of history has been hit, and we can no longer afford to live as half-light versions of ourselves. Many of you actually have 5 to 10 or even, 50 to 100 times the amount of experience of your ancestors of 100 years ago. And yet we're unprepared. We're unprepared for a time of so much accelerating change. But what to do? Where to go? How to take initiative? And what is key here, how to understand your purpose and possibilities in this, the most compelling moment in human history. Now, I realize that other times thought they were it, but they're wrong. This is it. This is it. And I'm here because I believe that what the world so desperately needs at this time is patterns for peaceful, passionately creative and effective people, and patterns for peaceful, passionately creative and effective societies. In other words, the possible human who helps to create the possible society. Now, as Claire told you, I've worked with every kind of person, from heads of state to the poorest people scratching out a miserable living in war-torn countries. I've worked with 2 presidents of the United States and with a poor man in southern India who wanted to improve the lives who were in his leper colony. I've worked with a great philanthropist woman who writes large checks for the betterment of humanity. I've worked with a fellow at the checkout counter. And what I find in all these lives is both pain and possibility, regardless of their station in life. And what I've tried to do is create a system that helps all people discover their higher purpose. I know that the promise of who we are and what we can be is so very, very great. And I'm also aware that the frustrations and pain that come with this knowing are things that can be overcome. Too often we're caught uncertain, unprepared, and unprotected in the face of too much happening, too fast. Recently I asked a group of people, what do you need? What do you fear? What is trying to happen for you? What are you yearning for? Well, one woman told me that what she was most yearning for was the courage to respond to all the other yearnings she felt. Courage to reorder her priorities, make time for personal exploration, instead of simply dedicating her best hours to just work, more work, and ultimately the promise of outward success. Another talked of learning new strategies for accomplishing the multiple tasks that were her lot. Poor woman, she held a full-time job, took care of her home and family, was going to school to complete a graduate degree in social work, and she was now responsible for her aged parents. Another person spoke of feeling a push from the past and a pull from the future to be all that she could be. She said, you know, Jean, it's as if my ancestors demand it and my descendants require it. A man reported that the capacity he most desired was to reactivate the parts of himself that he had let lapse. I said, like what? He said, well, like my imagination, like creativity. I've been running so hard to keep up with this big mortgage, keep my two kids in college. I'm moonlighting at a couple of jobs, and I've forgotten who I was. You know, as a young man, I was filled with dreams and ideas, so many dreams. I want to get some of them back. Human beings, my friends, are not constituted to be content with living as thwarted, inhibited versions of themselves. Throughout history and all over the world, people have felt a yearning to be more, a longing to push the membrane of the possible. Well, if you're one of these people, you're in the right place today. Do you know about caterpillars? They actually become complete mush in their development, but they contain within them what are called imaginal cells, the higher purpose cells that will allow them to eventually become butterflies. Let me tell you a little bit about my caterpillar days. When I was 14, I discovered that my parents were getting divorced. I was so brokenhearted. I was so full of grief, some friend said, well, Jean, the best way to get over grief is just to run. That's 14-year-old advice. So I took up running, and one day I was late for school and running down Park Avenue, and I ran into an old man, and I knocked the wind out of him. He had a French accent. He said to me, are you planning to run like that for the rest of your life? I said, yes, sir, it sure looks that way. He said, well, bon voyage. I said, yeah, bon voyage. And I ran on to school. The following week, I was walking my dog, my fox terrier, Champ, and I saw the old man again, and he said, oh, my friend, the runner, yeah, I see you have a fox terrier. I had one many years ago in France. Where are you going? I said, well, sir, I go to Central Park to think about things. He said, well, I will go with you sometime, okay? I will take my constitution out. He had a very long French name that sounded somewhat to me like tear, so I called him Mr. Tear. Well, he went with me to the park sometimes after that, actually for several years. You know, Mr. Tear was something else. He had no self-consciousness at all. One day, he suddenly fell to the ground on the grass, and with his long French nose raking the grass, he said, oh, my friend, the caterpillar. He had found a caterpillar. Ah, you are about to go through metamorphoses. Soon you will be, perhaps, a butterfly, a papillon. Then he looked at me and he said, hey, Jean, you can feel yourself to be a caterpillar too, huh? I said, oh, very easily, Mr. Taylor. Here I was, this 14-year-old girl, about 5'11", with a face full of red dots. I felt like a caterpillar. And then he said, well, what will you be? What will you do when you finally become un papillon, a butterfly? What is the butterfly of Jean? Well, I had never thought about that before, but I said, I don't know, Mr. Taylor. And he laughed. He said, yes, yes, you do, you do. Let the deep possibilities within you that are trying to create a new form
Let them come through. Imagine them. Who are you? What are you when you will be a butterfly?
I said, well, I think when I'm a butterfly, I'll fly all over the world and maybe I'll help people. He let boom, 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 Jean. And he changed the subject. He said, sniff the wind. Same wind was once sniffed by Jesus Christ. I said, Jesus Christ, sniff this wind. I better hold my breath. Oh, no, there were more. Marie Antoinette, Alexander the Great, Jeanne d'Arc. Hey, Jean, be filled with Joan of Arc, huh? Be filled with the tides of history. And then suddenly, Jean, look up at the sky, the clouds, the calligraphy of God in the sky. Well, this wonderful old man, he taught me how to see, how to feel, how to think, how to know that in spite of my mushy 14-year-old state, I was on the way to becoming a butterfly. Now, this man, Mr. Teilhard, his full name was Pierre Teilhard de Chardin, the great Jesuit paleontologist, thinker, philosopher, who happened to live across the street from me in those years. And my friendship with Teilhard de Chardin is what started me on the long road of exploring the human potential, the evolutionary initiative in us that is yearning for us to become so much, much more. How can we see more? How can we feel more? How can we evolve in our own time? How can we be more? And I took this work to something like, well, about 107 countries, studying the human potential, studying the cultural potential. Margaret Mead, the great anthropologist, became my great friend, and one day she said to me, Jane, I'm going to give you letters of introduction to the elders of different cultures, especially indigenous cultures. I want you to harvest the human capacity in these cultures. Find out how the capacities of one culture can be utilized to improve the life in another. And that's what I did, friends. I mean, part of my work has been studying cultural capacities, harvesting them for use in education, health care, social welfare, personal growth, creativity, and work and art. And indeed, I often find that the challenges that arise in one culture can often be met by applying the strategies developed in another. And that's one of the things I do all over the world. One of the places she sent me to was a tribe in West Africa where community issues were looked at in ways that we in the Western world would find astonishing. A question was presented in a village meeting, and it had to do with improving waste disposal. Now, did they sit down and discuss it in a linear, logical way, A, B, subsection C? Not at all. The people danced the problem. They sang about it. They drew it in the sand. They closed their eyes. They imagined solutions. They slept and dreamt about it. Then they danced and sang some more in that wonderful African back-and-forth way of singing. Hey, yay, yay, yay. Guess what? They got a solution, and a very good one, too, for they had run the problem through so many different modes of knowing, and they looked at it from many different points of view. I mean, really, folks, how paltry our endless committee meetings, our position papers seem compared to this kind of process. In fact, why don't you try this technique out sometime? I mean, why, when you seek a solution to something that concerns you, don't just sit there and frown and make lists. Dance, imagine, invoke, drum, strum, invite, draw, and sing the issue. And get your friends to do it too. And see what happens. I think you'll be surprised. You know, the world's people as a whole have so many good and useful ideas. For example, in Bali, one of the places I was sent, people learn artistic crafts very quickly by first entering into a kind of inner sense of being a mask, being the statue, being a painting, being a complex dance, and only afterwards expressing this in an artistic form. They incarnate the essence of what they want to create, and then they create it. And maybe that's why I found that 75% of the people in Bali are artists. I mean, they can be rice farmers too, or textile designers, but at their core, they are artists. among the Inuit people. Margaret Mead sent me there through northern Canada into Alaska. She said, Jane, that's the way she always started, Jane, find out why these people can fix mechanical problems in automobiles so quickly. So I went and I watched an Inuit Eskimo mechanic close his eyes, walk through the faulty machine in his mind. He had developed, a kind of almost holographic expertise, visualization. And it was because his people had to learn to hold in their mind an inner map of the subtle details of their landscape that, of course, could disappear in snow from one hour to the next. Well, what about the West? Well, we in the West are contributing an essential element to the coming world culture. As the Dalai Lama talked about fairly recently, he said that Western women are leading the way toward the rise of women the world over to full partnership with men in virtually the entire domain of human affairs. Why? Well, perhaps because women emphasize process rather than product. Their special gift is also making things cohere, relate, grow. Through women's eyes and feelings and sensitivities, often relationships are more important than final outcomes. The world within is as important as the world without. The emphasis is on connectivity, the interweaving of things. Thus, governance, education, work, health, society itself are being held to new standards that honor the fullness of who and what we can be. And one of the wonderful things about this, friends, is that this releases men to be what they can be. So this is a tremendous change. And once it is in full flower, the world will have turned a pivotal corner. This is the first time in human history that we have the capacity to harvest the genius of the human race that has grown up in different cultures because of what? Because of climate, because of geology, because of dance, music, humor, because of all the different ways of being that are held in different cultures. And in this discovery, we also discover the sheer immensity of what we contain and how the challenges of our time are requiring that we rise up to meet them in ways that have rarely been known before. You know, when you look at what we contain within us, it's as if we have a million keys to play and we tootle and hoot on about 50 of them. Or as if we're sitting in a garden filled with wonderful vegetables and fruit, and yet we insist on eating the bugs on the ground. We can't do that anymore. We have to use the extraordinary splendor of what we contain if we're going to survive our time. So, friends, we have an opportunity to play a role in the greatest transition drama the world has ever seen. I mean, the time we are in right now may well be the greatest either-or of history. We are being called into greatness. We have lived through the good times. We are now entering the great times. And we have little choice but to say yes. It is time that we start harvesting the fruits of our human capacity. And that's what brings you and me here today. Oh, you know, as you can hear, I'm really so passionate about it. And yes, I have put together a process which I'm excited about, to take you on a journey, each one of you, show you what's truly possible. This is the culmination of my life's work, and I'm dedicated to showing that you're coated with extraordinary potentials, you really are, and few of which we rarely learn to use. The time has come for us to tap in and use these potentials to transform ourselves, our communities, our professions, and our world. Friends, just consider why you are here. Yes, you're here because you have to be, but you're also here because the 13.7 billion year experiment that has resulted in your life could readily come to an end within the next century. You are here because you are present at the birth of an opportunity that exceeds our imagination. The great English poet and playwright Christopher Fry says, "Thank God our time is now. when wrong comes up to meet us everywhere, never to leave us, till we take the longest stride of soul men ever took. Friends, we're cracking the code of destiny here, yes. No longer can we afford to live lives of serial monotony, one darn thing after another, with a progressive dimming of our passion for life. Many of you feel that you need to be part of a larger emerging story, one in which you learn to think and feel and know in new ways, to become more creative, more imaginative, to aspire to a much larger awareness, one that is more finely equipped to deal with the many, many, many challenges of modern life. And in this growth and development, you will find clarity as to your highest purpose, your reason for being. You'll be able to see your deeper purpose, and yes, perhaps, your higher destiny. Because I happen to believe that we are all born with a destiny code. But because of our schooling and habituation and culture, we're only given part of that code. I mean, and over the next hour, I want to share with you information about my very different and I think unique system that will help you in discovering the rest of this code so that you can begin to live it. We live at a time when so many of us are beginning to awaken, and by golly, we have to awaken if we're going to survive this time. A deeper yearning for more meaning, fulfillment, and passion in our lives. And I know you long to live a life of purpose. I know that you yearn for meaningful work, deeper relationships, and to give your unique gifts to the world in order to make this world a better place. You feel an urgency around activating your potential, living your purpose. You know that the world needs your contribution, but the challenge of waking up sometimes feels like it's just too much, like you may never really, really live a life of purpose. So you feel you're ready to serve the world with your unique gifts, yes? But perhaps you don't know how to take the next steps. After having struggled so much, to actualize your purpose, you're beginning to feel, some of you, that maybe it's not really possible. You're longing to discover if you even have a unique purpose in life, or if maybe you're just not one of those special people who knows what they are born to do. Or you're called to begin a new project, a career that is deeply fulfilling, but you don't know exactly what it might look like or how to financially support yourself in the meantime. It's there, this yearning, but perhaps you don't know how to go further. So whatever your present situation, you know there's more out there for you, more meaning, more purpose, more import, more impact. We're at the major shift in values and consciousness and economics and ecology and health and creativity. And some of you know that you want to help make that shift happen in a major way while still, yes, creating a life of financial independence, prosperity, or if you prefer, enoughness. So here we are. What are we going to do about it? You know, in working with so many people for so many years, I've discovered three keys that are fundamental to everything I teach. And today I'm going to share with you something about how to use these keys. The first key, key one, how to open to the limitless field of possibilities within your body-mind system. How to activate new body-mind systems. How to activate higher levels of creativity. How to tap into the fact that you are not an encapsulated bag of skin dragging around a dreary little ego. You are an organism environment. You are symbiotic with fields of life. You have so many intelligences within you, personalities, wisdom, capacities, skills. Yes, you do. Key two, the second key. Opening yourself to your important role in the world at this time. Becoming part of a worldwide community of growth and purpose, shifting from the smaller self to the higher self. Key three, connecting to your largest story, your greatest story, your mythic story, building envisioning skills in which your local self is able to contact and be in deep partnership with a higher self, receiving higher orders of possibility and partnership. I've seen this work with literally hundreds of thousands of people. The building of the infrastructure of your mind and body so that you can take on the higher tasks of your deeper purpose. What I've just explained to you is a core component of the greater program that I've developed into a 7-week process. The three keys are woven throughout the process, a process that allows us to awaken to our higher purpose and destiny, encourages us to explore our potential through courageously committing ourselves to living a deeper, larger life, offering you essential tools to unlock your own unique possibilities, to claim the distinct gifts that you possess on the physical, psychological, mythic, symbolic, and spiritual level of your being. Above all, leading you into the immense treasures that you contain to live the life you're meant to live. I'll talk more about that process soon, but I want to give you some details on how we can continue our work together. As for those for whom this is important, this is a training that allows us to prepare ourselves to become stewards of the planet, filled with enough passion for the possible to partner one another through the needed social transformation that is occurring in nations and communities all over the world. So in this 7-week process, and even today in these three key principles on awakening to your higher purpose and destiny, you will discover that the human being is a palace of many rooms, many capacities, much potential. Growth requires that we set up housekeeping in these rooms. We live there. Rooms that may have been largely uninhabited by our conscious minds. And in my decades of research, I have found that all human beings contain these inner realms. But few have more than a passing acquaintance with what they hold. Most are familiar only with the surface dimensions, leaving their inward reaches unexplored. Yet it is in the world within that these realms of being have their greatest range, greatest variety, greatest depth, because in them lie the dormant potentials. In them are the materials for the reweaving of mind and body, and from them you get your marching orders for your life's deepest purpose. You know, I discovered this initially when I was 8 years old. My father, Jack Houston, was a well-known comedy writer for radio and television, and when I was 8, he was writing for the Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy show. Now, Edgar Bergen was a master ventriloquist, and Charlie McCarthy was this little wooden dummy who sat on his lap and made wisecracks. So one day my father said, "Hey, kiddo, you want to go with me to go deliver a script to Bergen?" I said, "Yeah, Daddy, let's go." So we went, came in. Bergen didn't see us enter. He was sitting there talking intensely to Charlie. Well, we listened to him talk back and forth. We figured he was rehearsing. But my father finally said, "Hey, you know, Jeannie, I didn't write that stuff." Because Bergen was asking Charlie, his dummy, ultimate questions. Saying, "Charlie, what does it mean to truly love? Charlie, what is the good life? Charlie, where is the soul? Does it exist?" And this little dummy was answering with his little wooden clacking jaw, saying, "Well, Bergen," and answering him with the wisdom of the finest minds of the past thousands of years. Well, Bergen would get even more excited, ask even deeper questions. And while we stood there behind him, we were stunned. I mean, he would say things like, "Charlie, how can men and women really make a positive connection and compact with each other?" And I really don't remember what Charlie said, but I remember the answer was very, very funny. Well, my father, who was an agnostic Baptist from Texas, he finally couldn't stand it any longer, and he coughed. And Bergen turned around and said, "Oh, hi, Jack. Hello, Jeannie." And he looked very embarrassed. "I see you caught us." And my dad said, "Yeah, Ed, what in the world do you think you're doing?" And Bergen said, "Well, you know, Jack, I'm talking to Charlie. He's the wisest person I know." My father said, "Oh, come on, Ed, come on. That's you. That's your voice. That's your mind coming out of that cockamamie dummy's mouth." And Bergen said, "Jack, I suppose ultimately it is. But you know, when I ask him these questions and he answers, I haven't got the faintest idea what he's going to say next. And what he says astonishes me every time. It is so much more than anything I know myself. Well, you know, friends, at that moment I felt my future and perhaps my future profession kind of walk across my soul, and I knew that I would devote the rest of my life to finding out that's so much more. So yes, we have a 7-week course, and I'm going to make it available to you at the end of this call, but right now, let's look more deeply at the three keys. The first key, key 1, opening to the limitless field of possibility within your body-mind system, activating a whole new body-mind sensory system which gives you great acuity, also activating high-level creativity, contacting the incredible field of new intelligences, personalities, capacities. We have to begin by letting go of old structures and habits so as to acquire new capacities, new habits. Now, what I try to do is show you how to gather your capacities and skills to accept and therefore to manifest your vision of your higher destiny, the one that's been waiting for you all your life to finally show up. Now, I know that there's a great deal of emphasis out there on first getting rid of the old habits. Yeah, that's a good way to go. But I have also found that when we have the lure of becoming, when we have a sense of the new possibilities that we can be, sometimes, not always, but sometimes, they help to override the old habits. So an artful approach to finding your higher destiny has to do with using your body, mind, and heart in ways that enhance the discovery of your deeper purpose. There simply is more to you than what you have felt that you are. I mean, there are more hooks and eyes to catch the higher purpose. So let's begin by activating some of these hooks and eyes. Let's begin with sensory acuity, sensing something of the expanded use of your body and its many potentials. I once made a study of 55 of some of the most creative people in North America. What they had, friends, was high-level, sustained creativity. Among them were names that some of you might know. They had been research subjects of mine for years. Margaret Mead, Joseph Campbell, Buckminster Fuller, Joseph Salk, briefly, and even briefly, Linus Pauling. A lot of people who were not well-known, but they had this high-level, sustained creativity. And I discovered that although they were very, very different from each other, they had some very critical things in common. They were archaeologists of their own mind. They were spelunkers in the caves of their own creativity. They were able to activate their inner sensory capacities and then apply these to any project they were engaged in. Let me give you an exercise now to do something not unlike what they did with themselves. I want you, first of all, to think about something that you would really like to do, some project or way of being that you would like to take on in a fairly short period of time, say, the next few months or a few weeks even, okay? Okay, do you have a project? Do you have something that you would like to do? Now, the first thing I'm going to do is show you how to use your inward imageries in such a way as to activate this project. Because thinking in images creates fire in the mind, visions in the soul, energy in the body. It helps you not only to finish the project, but to do so in ways that fits comfortably into the patterns of your inner universe. Let me show you how to do this. I'm going to run you through various senses. I'm going to give you things to think about, and then I'm going to ask you to think about using these different senses around your project. So let's begin with taste. That's always a good one. All right. I want you now to taste a crisp, juicy apple in your imagination. Crisp, juicy apple. Now I'd like you to taste vanilla ice cream. Would you now taste hot buttered toast? Those of you who want to can put marmalade on it. Would you please now taste a green salad, the kind with the field greens that bite your back, with a little olive oil lemon juice. Now here's a big one. Would you please taste an angel food cake or a big white cake topped with dark chocolate minted mousse and gobs of whipped cream? Now taste something of the celebrational dinner you're going to have when you finish your project. Let's go on to smell. I want you to smell a garden of roses. I want you to smell the sea, the waves as they lap in on the shore. I want you to smell a meadow after of rain. Would you please smell hot buttered popcorn? Would you please smell a pine forest? I want you to smell bread baking. I want you to smell your project. Don't worry about the logic of it. Just smell. Imagine what your project smells like. And now touch. I want you to touch the long, soft, bony nose of a horse. I want you to plunge your hands into a barrel of potato chips and break up as many as you can. I want you to walk through a swimming pool filled with warm honey. I want you to play patty cake with a small child. I want you to climb a tree. Feel what that feels like, climbing a tree. Now touch your project as it's being completed. Have a sense of touching it. Now we'll go to hearing. I want you to hear the rain falling on a roof. I want you to hear an opera singer holding her highest notes. I want you to hear vast applause. I want you to hear a chorus of my singing the Hallelujah chorus. I want you to hear Martin Luther King giving his speech, I Have a Dream. I want you to hear something that has to do with the accomplishments of your project. Now we move to seeing. I want you to see a sunrise. I want you to see a magnificent sunset. I want you to see the space shuttle taking off. I want you to see a falling star. I want you to see a good friend's face. I want you to see your own face. I want you to see your project being completed. And now, my friends, I want you to see, hear, touch, taste, smell, feel the project again. Run it through all your senses, because if you run your project through all your senses, what it does is engage the sensory powers of the mind. It begins to set up a kind of probability pattern, a neuronal enthusiasm, a hormonal energizer that tends to help you stick to, follow through on the project. And indeed, after this call is over, if you put on some rousing music, and you dance to the project, and you sing, and you clap, and you play with it, and you incarnate it, and you run it through your senses. Oh, folks, it really begins to take up residence in your mind-body system, and you will feel so much more inner passion and persuasion to follow through on it, you see. And this, of course, is part of the art and science of manifestation, about which a great deal more will be learned in this 7-week course. The art and science of manifestation. Because when I study highly creative people, I find that their minds are racing, synthesizing, doing the work of months, sometimes in minutes, because they're thinking and acting in images. Images are not time-bound the way other things are. So what you're doing also is you're learning to enrich your concepts and ideas. You're laying down pathways to appreciating the world about you and within you, because as you activate inner sensory systems, it activates the other sensory systems, and you just become more acute about things. You're activating the outer sensory systems as well. You begin to see, touch, feel, hear, and even know more. You become more visionary and creative. You're able to take any problem or project and solve it in ways that may seem quite magical and even miraculous. Let me tell you about a friend of mine, a student who I taught how to do these things and other related things. She was a housewife, very, very interested in social issues in her village. Actually, it wasn't a village, it was a town. Actually, it wasn't a town, it was a really good-sized city. And she was trying to work in her local community within this large city to make things happen. But she always ran into the usual brick wall, the endless committee meetings, people voting everything down that was important. So what she did was she began to work in her inner imagery, envisioning a community of workers who could make things happen. And then I asked her to think about and see what her role would be, and she saw herself being there in the center and making things happen. Now, working in this really good-sized town, it was about 160,000, 170,000 people when she began, helping them envision what they needed to make a better city. And so she found that what she needed and what they envisioned, and when they began to envision, with none of the old habit structures, all the old blockings attending, but just free-floating vision of what was possible, they found that they needed a safe place for teenagers to hang out. Somebody else saw that the local independent bookstore needed support. Others saw senior centers or centers for battered women that needed volunteers. She got them to imagine it, to write about it, to read about it, to talk about it with everyone that they met. She got them to find allies, because having allies is a very, very important part of getting your purpose and destiny on track. And she told them how creativity activates the artistic process to recharge their imaginations. Well, with these recharged allies, she began to organize festivals and weigh ideas, new inventions, creative visions, loads of expressive forms, getting together groups of people to, what did they do? They painted community murals. They landscaped the town, one of the parts of the town squares. They started a craft co-op. They brought local businesses and schools together to design and build a playground. They brought in elder people as mentors, as teachers of younger ones. And then she said, "You know, Jean, there is nothing the human imagination working in community cannot accomplish." And one thing about my friend Elizabeth, she has a genius to honor the capacities of others. She created what she called an asset community, understanding how the many assets that were there in people in the community could be brought together to do extraordinary things. She said, "I found that my neighborhood is an extraordinary collection of ingenious, eccentric, brilliant, skillful, weird, and wonderful types. And I'm trying to teach others to see that and to see what happens if they turn off their televisions and turn on the neighborhood." So indeed, you know, what we find with Elizabeth is the greatest of all human potentials, one that we try to teach people to be able to do and be, and that is, this woman recognizes and evokes other people to bloom. She teaches people to seek out ways of encouraging each other's capacities, each person's capacities. I mean, using the kinds of exercises that I'm describing here, these three keys, what she was able to do was truly help create a community. So she became mayor of her good-sized city in the Midwest and has been reelected for 7 terms. And she is now, as of this talking tonight, she is now the president of the United States Mayor's Conference. So you see, in this key, we teach participants to meet and enjoy their own tremendous psychological nature in entirely new and surprising ways. I mean, leading them to discover different kinds of intelligence. I mean, you all have different kinds of intelligence within you. How many of you out there think in images? How many of you think in words? How many of you think with your whole body? How many of you have street smarts? How many of you think from the heart? How many of you have emotional intelligence? How many of you have the intelligence of discernment? You use your mind and body system in different ways. Some of you have access to different states of consciousness, creative states. Look at what you have within you. You have inside of you many people. As I said, you're not in an encapsulated bag of skin. You have many personalities. Ego, friends, is but one image among the multiple images within the human psyche. And when you increase the perspective of the different, what are called, not just personalities, they're called persona within you, you give up your old habits and expectations. Because it takes a broad and deep use of the whole self in all its glory and complexity. But as you begin to do this, you begin to have the perspective and the stamina to see who you really are in the great ecology of present space and time. You are many, many people. I'll give you my own story. I really dislike writing. I'm even phobic about it. Now, some of you who know me say, but Jean, you've got about 26 books or so out there. And some of you who know me very well know that I've actually got over 260 unpublished manuscripts of 400 pages apiece sitting in my library. How does that happen? Well, for my mystery school, I write a small book every month, and by the time it's delivered with all the exercises and it's typed, you know, the three-day seminar, it's about 400 pages. Now, I can't write, but boy, can I cook. And the reason I'm such a good cook is that my mother, whose name was Maria Annunziata Serafina Graziella Fiorino Papeccio Tedaro, who was born in Siracusa, Sicily, came to America and she married Jack Houston of Texas. Well, they got along pretty well, but they hated each other's food. My father could not abide the smell or the look of garlic. He'd said, "I'm married, those are stink buds. That's what the old witch women wear down in Texas around their necks to fight off the boogies and the runny shoes." So what was I going to do? Well, I became the world's first fusion cook, trying to put their two cuisines together, making things, awful things really, like chicken fried polenta. I mean, because I have no blocks at all, none as a cook, what I do when I write, in order to get over my phobic responses, I become a cook. And I think entirely as a cook. I bring my cook personality up front. And what do? Is I stir in spices of different ideas. I add the buttery sauces of associations. And I find as if by magic that the writing gets done. You see, you each have within you so many willing inner helpers. So many, we could even say, masters or exponents of various skills and attitudes. I'm going to name a few, and just see if any of them ring a bell with you. Painter, plumber, psychologist, healer, mechanic, accountant, inventor, poet, dancer, relationship expert, parent, orator, lover, student, teacher, theologian, traveler, meditator, comedian, animal companion, that's a big one with me, house cleaner, not mine, writer, singer, group organizer, time manager, mystic, compassionate one, and also total fool. Well, there's so many others that only you would know. Wild woman, wild man. I mean, some of them have to do with a mastery of a particular skill that you might have, like swimming or playing the violin or weaving or woodworking. Others might even represent your various roles in relationships, daughter, sister, son, best friend, best buddy, mentor. anything with which you have familiarity and practice, however small or large, can be an inner expert who is always available to support, consult, and inspire both your inner and your outer efforts. And not only that, but to bring to stage front in your personality, and will often be able to work to solve some problem that different personality, work and engage some task with skillful means, and with often a larger and more inventive sense than your ordinary everyday self. You see, thus, as a cook, I can write. I can write. Let me show you something very interesting. I'd like you to choose a skill that you'd like to work on. Everybody got a skill? And ask the master of that skill to come forward. This being a master of the skill can be male or female or something else, an angel, a goddess, could even be an animal. And he or she or it leads you to a place nearby where you can work together to improve your skill. And all the materials you need are there. Paints, piano, golf clubs, tennis rackets, computers, yoga mat, dancing shoes, I mean, whatever you need. And the very space around you seems filled with the essence of your skill. Now, at this level of the psyche, friends, an enormous amount of information is available, which is normally not processed by the conscious mind. I mean, you have an inner master of a skill who has access to all the knowledge you've ever gleaned, consciously or unconsciously, about the skill, including some new tricks. When you call on this master of the skill, some of this hidden knowledge can be harvested and integrated into your learning. Because just below the surface crust of consciousness, ordinary consciousness, the creative process, I find, is going on all the time, waiting for you to tap into it. You are filled with ideas and associations, linking with other ideas, linking with other ideas. The very stuff of evolution is moving in you to emerge as creativity, as innovation, because your deep mind is in a state of creativity all the time. And when you learn some of the phenomenal techniques to tune into this deep mind, tune into this creativity whenever you wish to, you gain many advantages. Time, memory, heightened creativity, the sense of deep and continuous accomplishment. This is something I will teach you in the 7-week course. Now, this is what I want to show you. Not only can you enter and get this master of the skill to begin to train you, really train you, but you can do it in a very short period of time. And this brings us to the skill of using time differently. You know, when I was 19, I had a terrible hobby. I used to jump out of planes. Yes, I did it with a parachute. But one day I probably didn't pack my parachute very well, so when I jumped out and I pulled the cord, nothing happened. Pulled the cord, nothing happened. And then it seemed to me that I went into life review. I mean, not every little pork chop and Hershey bar, but most of the major events of my life up to the age of 19 replayed in my mind in what almost seemed like real time, not flashing by at all. And then either I pulled the cord and the chute opened, or you and I are having a very nice online seminar in paradise. What I learned in that experience is that we have access to all kinds of time. Subjective time, for example, in which you can take 5 minutes of clock time and experience it as hours. Hours in which you can rehearse some skill or even accomplish some project. And we have to really take real time to do this. I'm going to give you something that you can do when this call is over. Give yourself 1 minute of clock time, equal subjectively as if you'd had all the time you need to, well, take a trip around the world, or do something else that you'd like to do that would normally take substantial time, visit friends, go on a journey, do something interesting. And once you start doing that, 1 minute of clock time equals subjectively to all the time you need to do something that would normally take much longer time. Once you start doing that, you'll find that you can take more time, 3 minutes, 4 minutes, or even 5 minutes of clock time, equal to all the time you need, and you can do all kinds of things. I've just given you a preview exercise to be able to orchestrate time, for example, the one where you meet an inner master who has access to the knowledge that you have of how to improve a skill. Well, you can learn to contact this master of the skill, but you can also learn to contact, with this time amplification, the master of your higher purpose and destiny, to actually come and work with you on these great themes. Try this a few times and see if there isn't, in fact, far greater clarity around your life and its higher meaning. Let's go to key two. The second key, which has to do with opening yourself to your larger role in the world, becoming part of a community of growth and purpose so that you move from a smaller self to a higher self. I was present at the dying days of my great friend, the anthropologist Margaret Mead. She had been teaching me for years to work with governments and bureaucracies. And suddenly, she opened her eyes and she said, "Jean, forget everything I've been teaching you about working with governments and bureaucracies." And I looked down at my dying friend and I said, "Now you tell me this?" And she laughed. She said, "Yes, I'm lying here being an anthropologist on my own dying. Fascinating experience. There's no hierarchy to it. And I realize that if we're going to grow and green our time, it's a question of people getting together in teaching, learning communities." "Well, doing what, Margaret?" "Well, you know, doing your kind of work, Jean, other kinds of work where people grow at all levels, doing processes, talking to each other, growing in mind and body and spirit. Now, it isn't psychotherapy. It isn't a psychotherapeutic community. That's something else. You don't want some psychic carnivore coming around who just steals everybody else's energy. No, Jean, it has to be a growth community. And then as they grow together, Jean, on the basis of that growth, they'll be able to take the challenges. Go out, do something about it. Whether it's creating homes for the elderly or running for office or whatever. You go out and you do that, Jean. You just do it." "Yes, ma'am, I will." And she passed away the following day. So friends, that's what we're trying to do here. We're trying to create a wonderful teaching, learning, growth, global community. Growing together, working together, becoming possible humans, cooking on more burners, using more of yourselves. And then as a result of this amplified use of our own inner capacities, able to go out and truly make a difference in the world. I once had a student who had had a very hard time in part of her life. She had had a very abusive father, and she married a man she thought would be very nice. He turned out to be very abusive as well. She felt she had been deeply betrayed in her life. And finally, after a miserable, bitter divorce, she became one of the most totally negative people I've ever known, really toxic. She always saw the glass as half empty, and her face, I'll never forget, it was just scrunched up with worry. She was so negative about just about everything, but as we began to work together on these things, we tried to help her find a new story that would work for her. We worked through awareness and growth, treating each moment as if it were filled with spirit, practicing the kinds of things that we're offering here in this course. And you know what happened? Her life turned completely around. She became the practitioner of the via positiva, the positive life. I told her a story about something that happened when I was 8 years old. It was something that happened 2 weeks after the Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy event. I went to a school in New York. It was PS6. And this was a tremendous school. It sometimes took us to meet the great elders of the time. And so we were taken to meet Helen Keller, who by the time she was 19 months old, was deaf, dumb, and blind. I remember she was a very handsome woman, and she was probably in her 70s at the time, but she spoke to us in that luminous voice of someone who has never heard speech. And after she spoke, I was so moved that when they asked, "Is there any child who'd like to come up and have their lips read and ask a question of Miss Keller?" my hand shot up. I had no idea what I was going to say, but by golly, I knew I had to talk to her. So I went up there and she placed her entire hand on my face with the center of her hand. She read my lips. And with her fingers, I remember, she seemed to read my expression. And I blurted out with a child's savage honesty, "Why are you so happy?" And she laughed and laughed. And this is what she said. And I'm going to tell you what she says and with what it sounded like to me at the time. She said, "My child, it is because I live each day as if it were my last, and life in all its moments is so full of glory." Life in all its moments is so full of glory. Was she damaged technically? Yes. Was she really damaged? Not at all. No, she had rewoven the remaining filaments of her senses into this extraordinary web in which she could catch the world. And she developed such radical empathy, such profound capacity for loving and for relationship, that she went out and helped so many, many disadvantaged people. When I told this story to my friend, well, that seemed to do it. You know, friends, it's really in the telling of our good stories, our great stories, as well as all the other trainings that we do, that changes our life. I'm just going to read a couple of things from the way she describes her life as it is now. She told me, I'll read from her, she says, "When I awaken in the morning, I reflect on my dream, teasing out its messages or teachings. My shower is a conscious cleansing and refreshing of all my senses. Standing under the flow, I set my motivation for the day. Great Spirit, let me be a blessing to someone today. And for my morning meditation, I walk through my garden, wonderfully aware of the breeze and the birds, the greening power of the earth that touches the sky. After savoring my breakfast, I turn to the good news of arts and theater in the community, of people helping people. Only then, with a positive mind, do I read about war and mayhem. I'm always looking for the balanced story of what's trying to happen in the world. Often I write a check to help refugees in a war-torn country or others in need. I take the bus to work. I work in finance, and I try to help clients to see what they really need. And my clients open up and tell me about their deeper hopes and dreams. I go to my Aikido class. I work to meld my energy with that of my practice partner so that my techniques and my practice become a complex dance of suddenly shifting awareness. Then I eat dinner with a group of single mothers I'm mentoring. I regard them not just as women in difficulty, but as peers from whom I can learn so much. Conversation flows easily, and I share with them difficult times in my life, the divorce, betrayal, how healing happened. And when my day is done, I greet my home like the old friend it is. I water the plants, seeing them as fellow beings, who just are not mobile or particularly talkative. Then I call my fiancé, who lives in another city, and we share a good deal of love talk. Then I reflect on the fullness of my life, of the revelation of my life, and of the divinity that animates all things." End of quote. And that's just a little of how she describes her day. This woman turned around by what we call the via positiva, the positive way of looking at life. But it was the story of Helen Keller that really did it. "I live each day as if it were my last, and life in all its moments is so full of glory." Glory, friends, life in the kingdom, not in the outskirts. A life in which abundance is scooped from abundance and still more abundance remains. Or as my Sicilian grandmother, Vita Tadaro, said, "Gina, it's all about la vita, abbondanza." So in this community, friends, this teaching, learning community that we're beginning here, yes, yes, you will gain support and training, a sense of being part of the movement to create the possible human whose purpose is to make a more possible world. With that, we come to the third key, key three, connecting to the greatest story, the mythic story. Well, did you know that you were a mything link? Well, you are. You are the living connection between the great stories of all times and places and the playing out of these stories in everyday life. Beneath the soil of everyday life, beneath the everyday world, lies the vast root system of that which once was and yet can be. Yes, indeed. Moreover, how we view our life as a story often determines how life will treat us. If we see our life as a trivial story, we fall easily into inertia and defeat. But when we see our life as a larger story, it puts us back on our feet. It makes it possible to get on with life, because storying is essential to the healing process. It allows the best of what we are to come together: reason, intuition, empathy, and understanding. Ultimately, wisdom. In the work I've done in mediation and reconciliation in Northern Ireland and in India, between European and indigenous groups in other parts of the world, this is a terrible thing to say. I mean, I find that, I'm going to say very politically incorrect, especially with my work, but I find that despite elaborate process procedures created by the best think tanks or the most lofty and deliberate political and academic councils, old fears of mistrust remain. You can affix signatures to agreements, but hearts have not been changed. Without storying, contending parties can agree on abstract principles, but there's no real meaning, no genuine human exchange. My technique, and it's one that I will teach you in the course, is to persuade people to tell their most significant and heartfelt stories to each other, to meet at the level of deep listening before they ever get down to business at hand, because when lives are shared, everything else follows. I mean, critical to all this, friends, are the universal things: love, children, yearning. As we speak together about these universal things, we lose the sense of otherness. But just as important, we forge new understandings across differences, and certainly, when we see each other through the distorted lens of labels and stereotypes, we are in relationship with our expectations and not with life itself. Story opens the window of direct perception, and that's the clear light of human connection streaming through, and that is why a great story can fill us with a passion for the possible, give us access codes to infinite possibilities. You know, we all won the ultimate Olympics. We were one of the millions of sperm, those heroic millions who battled their way upstream against insurmountable odds and eventually came together with its cosmic other half, only to die gloriously in an explosion of new life. So don't think you never accomplished anything. You were the ultimate Olympic champion. Every adolescent yearns for the land over the rainbow, the magical country of adulthood where we will shed our gawkiness, take on important tasks, be seen for who we really, really are. A typical midlife crisis is a kind of passion play. We lose a job, our marriage falls apart, we face serious illness, and this stripping away of our hopes and dreams often seems a kind of myth. But as we will see, what happens in myth, our suffering occurs in the middle of the story, the end of which is access to greater skills and understanding, and even resurrection into new ways of being. I will be taking you also through the great hero's journey. You feel called, you're called, you fear the call, so you refuse the call. But then you say, okay, I can't stand myself, I need to get on with it. The yearning, the purpose in me that's trying to come through, it's too great. And so you agree. And an ally shows up, and you finally are able to cross the threshold of those who are trying to stop you, including yourself, and you enter into the great world of high adventure, of new challenges, of transformation, and you meet the deep inner beloved who knows you, the great archetypal spiritual partner, and in this great journey you gain all kinds of new capacities, and then you come back as a master of two worlds, a master of the world of space and time, and the master of the world of one who has access to the depths, the great journey, the mythic journey of the hero and heroine. You know, we have an essential being. We really do. In ancient Greek, there was a word for it. It was entelechy. It was Aristotle's word. And it means your higher purpose, your that which is trying to happen. I mean, it is the entelechy of an acorn to be an oak tree. It's the entelechy of a baby to be a grown-up human being. It's the entelechy of you to be, oh, so much more, so very much more. It also can mean your higher essence, yourself, as if you'd had 1,000 years to do your human homework. This entelechy, this essential self, which is the deepest part of yourself, is also the deepest guidance. Now, this is what I'd like you to do now. I'd like you to put your hands out, sort of patty cake style. Open your eyes or not, or close your eyes, however you want. But know that someone is here to meet you. The person may even look a lot like you, but like you if you had spent 1,000 years developing your full potential. It is your entelechy, your essential self, your guide, your high being. The part of yourself that is encoded with your higher destiny, your purpose for being, and who is able to help you manifest now what you yet can be. It is the deepest, the holiest, the most whole, the most essential part of you. You might sense it as inner strength or as vital force that directs your life and grows toward becoming all that you're capable of being. This essential self often has a radiance that your local self does not. It's in touch with your life, of the life of the universe. It's in touch with the wisdom of the earth and the wisdom of your heart. It can put you in touch with the unexplored continents that lie within your mind and body, for it knows the maps of the soul and the treasures that can be found there. Feel it. Touch it. Be touched by it. Look at it. It is looking at you, this entelechy, this essence self, looking at you with such love, with such a sense of encouragement and empowerment. It is igniting you. It is calling you forth with love. It is cherishing you. It has such deep appreciation of who and what you really are. It sees you in your fulfillment, in your creative genius. It knows why you are here, what you yet can do, where you can go, and why you need to go there. It is the essential self, the mysterious friend who has always been ever near, no matter how much we may have denied its existence. It is there for you, this great friend. I have found this idea of the great friend in remarkable people, friends. I was a friend of Mother Teresa of Calcutta, and I once asked her, "Mother, how is it you're able to do so much? You're able to take care of any little baby who's left at the creche outside your convent. You're able to try to help the leper have a decent life, you know, get him a profession and not just being on the receiving side. You're able to take care of the poor and the sick, hungry. How can you do so much?" And she said to me, "My dear, it's because I am so deeply in love." I said, "You're in love, Mother? Really?" "Oh, yes. Would you mind telling me who you're in love with?" "Not at all. I'm in love with Jesus. I'm married to Jesus." And I said, "Oh, of course you are, Mother. All nuns are." She said, "No, Jean, you don't understand. I really am. And I'm in such a state of loving with my beloved that I see my beloved in that day-old child. I see my beloved in the leper, in the poor, and those in need. And I cannot do enough for my beloved. And perhaps that's why my beloved has done so much for me." So you see, my friends, she lived in that great essential archetype of spiritual partnership. His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, when I talked to him, he also told me that he is deeply in love with Chenzrik. Chenzrik, Buddha of compassion. And he is so in touch, he even becomes the Buddha's compassion, looking out at the world with so much love, humility, and delight. Yes. So finally, friends, the quality of ourselves may depend on the presence of that divine image in us, in our agreement to lend it commitment to experience it as the beloved of the soul. This is partnership spirituality. You are not a dependent. You are a partner with a divine purpose You are partner with the Universal Planner, and so you will open your aspiration, your longing, your yearning, which is the entry point to the higher plan, to the even greater intention that surrounds your life from your essential being. Now, earlier in this call, I promised you I would tell you how we can go deeper into this process together. This is the part where I'll show you how to take all the information to help you make the transformation, discovering and living your purpose. This is about the three keys, the power core components of the 7-week process called Awakening to Your Life's Purpose. And so we will find in the 7 weeks the ways of activating the highest sense of the self, the field of infinite possibility, your new sensory systems, your body-mind knowing, your limitless field of inner intelligences, personalities, capacities, their new identity becoming part of this great emerging story, your divine essence discovering your place in history and story, deep seeing, envisioning, evocation, celebration. And this is where you will learn the higher codes. We are enthralled, provoked, unsettled, called forth by codes. We are drawn into these great codes. You contain these codes. And in these sessions together, we're going on a treasure hunt. We're going to use all the things we've ever learned to look for our life's code, to learn how it plays itself out in the world and with others, to align ourselves with the highest purpose, to live fully defined by its power. I want us so much to enhance our journey as human beings who are charged by purpose, aware of our higher destiny, dedicated to moving toward it with excitement, joy, and community. Oh, yes, yes, we're going to do this. Now, would you do me a favor? Would you please click the link on your webcast page that says, Visit the Awakening to Your Life Purpose course page. Over the course of 7 weeks, I will be taking you step by step through the process of truly awakening to your life's purpose. With your registration, you will experience the 7 powerful weekly course sessions. You can scroll down the webpage to read all the details about each of them. And you'll also receive a digital workbook with practice and reflection exercises for each course session, as well as access to the recordings of all the course sessions that you can listen to online or download the MP3 files to your iPod or audio player, as well as the PDF transcripts of each course session. Now, between the 7 course sessions, you will be set up for what I believe can be transformation in every aspect of your life. Your relationship with others and with yourself will become more connective and fulfilling. You will become an artist of destiny, capable of orchestrating the 4 great levels of human consciousness, the sensory-physical realm, the psychological realm, the mythic-symbolic realm, and the spiritual or integral realm. And you will find that you will be gaining new capacities in each. You will also discover how to tap into the miraculous creativity that is bubbling just beneath the surface of ordinary reality. And you will come to a kind of mastery of techniques to tune into this creativity whenever you wish, as well as improve your memory and play with time in such a way that you will experience, or you can experience, 5 minutes of clock time as hours, or as much time as you need, to learn new skills or move a project forward. You will become a peacemaker, a bridge builder, a magnet for solutions, and a pathfinder. And you will discover how to live so that other people feel enriched and nourished simply by being around you. Now, I'd actually like to share with you a couple of the many, many inspiring messages I've received from graduates of the course. Let's see now. This first one is from Laura, who is an art therapist in Asheville, North Carolina. She writes, I started a new job and began working on a pediatric oncology unit. I've always wanted to do this type of work, but the opportunity had not arisen. So I opened myself up to my greatest destiny, and I trusted that the universe could bring me not only one, but several incredible choices. This is the one I chose. I feel so blessed being able to spend time with these children, as they are some of the most incredible souls I have ever met. Thank you, Laura. That's so wonderful. Let's see. Here's one from Bonnie, a consultant in Edmonton, Canada, who writes, I've lost 20 pounds. I'm lighter, not just physically, but emotionally, mentally, and spiritually. Happier, more upbeat and optimistic about my own future and the future of the human race on the planet. I'm also less likely to feel angry or judgmental, more likely to choose loving responses. I more quickly shift to, what is the gift for me in this situation? I'm also making connections with like-minded people, and for the first time in my life, I'm not trying to make something happen. I've given up struggle, and I'm loving this peaceful, serene way of being in the world. Truly, friends, wonderful messages both. And again, these are just two examples of the kinds of extraordinary life changes participants experience both inside the course and afterwards as they move into the rest of their new and often profoundly fulfilling lives.
Oh, there's so much to this. I mean, there's so much. If you really are ready to begin to enter into the larger life of body, mind, and spirit, what Margaret Mead referred to when she said, never doubt that a group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it is the only thing that ever has. She said variations of that sentiment to me many times over the years. And so, whether it's a small group or a large group, it makes no difference. It's a group that's going to change the world together, or at least try with all its might, and at least change ourselves. And it will set you off on life adventures that seem sometimes more mythic than real, but they're real, all right. So say yes to life today. Say yes to the human potential that's in you. Make the commitment to change yourself and change the world. I am committed to bringing all that I know and all that I've experienced to you, and I hope that you decide to join me and hold the same intention for yourself. For after all, these are the times, and we are the people. Let's work together, shall we? Thank you.